Christianity is a fascinating faith because it takes individuals. It actually seeks individuals who are hurting, crushed, downtrodden, helpless. And it turns them into individuals that are stronger, restored, spiritually vibrant, people with hope once again. And this morning we're going to see that there is an encouragement to people who feel pressured and tired or worn out to refocus on Jesus Christ and to gain that revitalization. It's in Hebrews chapter 12, starting at verse 1, it says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart." Last week and this week, I've been having us focus on the illustration, the analogy of a race, in terms of the race of faith, that we are moving toward the goal of life eternal, and we want to continue to push forward and exert the effort of running the race of life well in order to get eternal life. That being the prize, so to speak, that is offered to us. Last week, we focused on the difficulty, the challenge, the trial of being committed and dedicating ourselves and being disciplined to continuing our faith in a serious way. This morning, I want us to focus on the encouragement and the anticipation of the prize, and let that give us enthusiasm and sustenance and re-energize us so that we're motivated to continue running the race of faith. The first thing we need to notice here in this text is that it discusses a cloud of witnesses. It's kind of interesting that they use the term cloud. Recently, in electronics and technology, you might be hearing the term cloud more and more. Anybody ever heard of the cloud now? Huh? A few of us are hearing about it. The idea behind the cloud, essentially, is that instead of having all the information residing on your computer hard drive or in a particular location, eventually information will just be available to pull down anywhere. It will be in the waves, it'll be in the air around us, and that everybody will have the information available. It'll be like a cloud surrounding us of information that we can access at any point, any location, any time. Okay? That's the new thing in relation to cloud. If you want to have a particular instance of this, there's a migration that's happening in audio. As I deal with the audio industry, there's a migration happening from hard media like CDs now to internet-based audio, and the cloud is the next step, that any music you want, anytime, you can get on any device from the cloud. Okay? Well, what's being discussed here with the cloud of witnesses, what does that mean? What's that talking about? You know, since we're surrounded by a great cloud of witnesses, you know, let us run this race. Well, what is that referring to? What it's referring back to is chapter 11 of Hebrews. And traditionally, chapter 11 of Hebrews has been known as the great faith chapter. In fact, if you go back to verse 1 of Hebrews 11, it discusses the nature of faith. And it says, faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see. It starts with faith in God. In verse 3, by faith we understand that the universe was formed at God's command. So it begins with the premise of faith, belief in God. And then the rest of the chapter proceeds to discuss people that are held up as great examples of faith. We have Moses and Joseph, and we have the apostles and people like this mentioned in Hebrews chapter 11. But all of these individuals that are being mentioned ended up dying. They died in the faith. And the conclusion of Hebrews chapter 11 says, in verses 39 and 40, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. What does that mean? Well, just as he has promised us, God has promised people of all ages who have believed in him, the Jewish people, the Christians. God has promised eternal life, a resurrection from the dead, a restoration of body, soul, spirit in a heavenly home. That has been the ultimate goal, the ultimate promise. Those people in Hebrews chapter 11 who died in faith, they haven't received that ultimate fulfillment yet. That won't come until Christ returns, judgment day, the last day. And then the resurrection of the dead, well, the resurrection of the dead has to happen before the judgment, obviously, but that will all happen on the last day, and then the final fulfillment of those promises. Now, what's being said in Hebrews 11, verse 40 is, God had planned something better for us so that only together with us would they be made perfect. Those that have died in the faith are awaiting that final fulfillment just as we look forward to that final fulfillment. Now, with that in mind, in chapter 12, it refers back to those people who have died in faith. They are this cloud of witnesses. They are the... Is my microphone dying? I think my microphone's dying. Can we get some new batteries up here? Or I'm just going to grab the other mic. Hold on one second. There. I'm going to go with the white mic. Okay. So these people that have died in faith are a great cloud of witnesses. And it's like it's discussing these individuals who are now looking down around us. Think of the ancient illustration that we used last week of the stadium or the arena. Thousands of individuals who are watching the competitors on the field. They're running the race, and the great cloud of witnesses observing them. That's what this is talking about. Now, I will tell you very plainly that when it comes to, oh, so you mean grandma is watching me down here now? Or, you know, I have had Christians who have had kind of eerie experiences. You know, a relative has died, and then 3 weeks later they see an apparition in their kitchen, you know, of their loved one. I'm not going to get into all that. That all gets into the nebulous. That goes beyond the purview of the scriptures. There's no extended discussion about loved ones and what all they're doing now and do they see us and this and that. Paul is simply using an analogy saying in the spiritual world we're being watched. We know the angels of God look upon our activities. We know the Lord is watching our activities. He makes an allusion that those that died in the faith are kind of watching us, waiting for us to finish the race. I'm not going to go beyond that because you get into all kinds of weird things that are unsubstantiated in the scriptures when you start pushing beyond that point. We're going to stay within the confines of what we actually know from the scriptures.
But now it's like someone's watching us run the race of faith. Since they're watching us, that should motivate us to run a better race. As it says here, since we're being surrounded by this cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. I have never run a long race. I still jog, you know, but I have never run a long race like a marathon. There's been some in the congregation who have. I think Gary Edwards has finished a marathon. Half marathon. I know that Rick Koepke's done one. Very arduous, very challenging races. One of the practices I understand of marathoners, when they're running in a cold environment, is that before the race, if it's cold outside, they obviously got to try to stay warm. So they'll have whatever, a little hat or gloves or whatever. And when they get going on the race, obviously their core temperature increases. And as they start running, they will actually strip off some of this extra clothing. You know, they'll toss a hat or the gloves or whatever. And my understanding is that, like, a marathon in a cool climate is almost like a continuous yard sale, you know, with their clothing spewing all over. And they're doing this because to retain that clothing would be a hindrance to them in the race. So they just jettison it. Well, we're encouraged to think of the sins that we struggle with as something that will slow us down, something that will hinder our progress. We all have what are called besetting sins. Things that we continuously stumble on, things that we repeatedly do that we don't like, we're frustrated, we'd love to leave it past. One encouragement to us is to think of these things as hindrances to progress. Satan will try to get us and tempt us to think that sin is pleasurable or that sin somehow benefits us. That's almost never the case. Instead, it becomes a liability. It becomes a hindrance. And we need to see it properly, that we are engaged in a race of faith. And the sins that we commit are actually hurting us long term. So look at them from that perspective and don't think you're getting away with, because in reality, it's hurting your progress. This might help you now to reframe the struggle with sin you have and to think of it as you will be benefited and make more progress by losing the sin habit than by keeping it in your life. And especially with in mind then that there are those observing us, the angels of God, the Lord himself, in this cloud of witnesses. Do the deceased in faith watch us? There is some analogies such as this that say they do. Well, if that's the case, all the more reason then to try to throw off these poor habits and these sins and to get committed and to run the race better. Let's take a look at the next phrase here. I also love this analogy in verse 2. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. Fixing our eyes. You've heard the phrase that was said, keep your eyes on the prize, right? This is the motivation, looking at the eternal goal. I often like to think of heaven and what heaven will be like, that it is a celebration, that it's a reunion, that it is a leaving behind of the pains of sin, the loneliness of life, the worry and the grief and all of these things that are the outcomes of sin, much less death, all of this gets left behind and we are left with the joys of life, the beauty, the social connectedness, the feeling of being worthy, of being appreciated and loved and loving someone else, and all of the benefits and positives of life are what reside in heaven. And that's what we are to focus on, so that it motivates us at the times when we are struggling, when we are having difficulties. You know, relating once again to these long-distance races, individuals who run these long races will sometimes strategically place individuals along the route so that they can gain encouragement. You've heard of hitting the wall at approximately, I think it's mile 20 or so, where individuals will have incredible physical lows. They'll have challenges. And they'll have individuals that will try to boost them, try to encourage them to keep pushing through the pain and to get that second wind, so to speak. Well, that's what we're being encouraged to do here. In your struggle in faith, you're going to hit low points. You're going to hit challenges. You're going to have times where you're going to feel like quitting, where you're going to want to quit on your good spiritual disciplines or learning and reading the scriptures. You're going to have all kinds of hassles. And the encouragement here is refocus, recommit. Let the joy of the great prize motivate you so that you don't quit. What's interesting here is that it says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. And I want to make a distinction here, a technical distinction. When it says, fix your eyes on Jesus, this is not talking about the Jesus who preached and taught and healed the sick, the Jesus who fought with the Pharisees. This is not talking about Jesus who suffered and died on the cross. You are not to fix your eyes on that Jesus. Now you might be saying, Pastor, that almost sounds heretical. You know, I've always enjoyed making what I call nearly heretical statements. In other words, things that sound really bad, but when they're understood properly, are very profound. Now, I just said we're not supposed to fix our eyes on the Jesus who preached and taught and healed the sick and who was crucified on the cross. And the reason you're not supposed to fix your eyes on him is because that's the pre-cross Jesus. That's not who we're talking about here. We are talking about the post-resurrection Jesus. We're talking about the man who defeated sin and death. We're talking about the individual who rose from the grave, the person who overcame Satan. We're talking about the individual who ascended into heaven and, as our creed says, sits at the right hand of God the Father Almighty, the one who is at the position of authority and elevation, the one who is honored, who has accomplished salvation for us. And there is a huge difference between the Jesus who hangs on the cross suffering and the Jesus who is off of the cross resurrected once again. We are to focus our eyes on the victorious Christ. Look at the words in verse 2. They're all past tense. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, the one who has accomplished what was necessary, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, past tense, it's in the past, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. This is all past tense. He has done what it took in order to secure our salvation. Now, he is victorious. That is very important for us, that we don't honor Jesus in his suffering state, but in his glorified, victorious state. There are things that remind us of this to give us encouragement. Like, for instance, in the book of Revelation, over the years, as I talk with people about reading the book of Revelation, many individuals are scared of the book. Many people are kind of fearful of Revelation, because it has all kinds of weird imagery, and Satan seems so powerful, and God's wrath and bowls of wrath being poured out, and third of the water turned to blood, and a third of the trees and forests burned up, and all kinds of weird things like beasts coming up out of the earth and all this strange stuff. People say, I don't like the book of Revelation. It's scary. Until you understand that the book of Revelation is all about the victory of Jesus Christ. And one of the principal ways that I learned, hey, I was in the pastoral ministry for like going on 15, 17 years before I discovered this. The key to the book of Revelation is the songs in the book. The songs in the book of Revelation are victory march songs, sort of like the military chants when they are marching. They're songs that are to be sung strongly. And these songs are all about the power and the glory and the wisdom and the majesty of the Lamb. And the Lamb overcame by his might. It's all victory. And every time in Revelation something bad and nasty is happening on the earth and Satan's on the attack and there's false prophets and all this and that stuff going on, in heaven there is a song that is sung, and it is strong, and it is reinforcing the victory of Christ, and Satan's doom is assured, and this goes on and on and on, cycle after cycle. There's negativity and spiritual attack, and then out of heaven comes this song that the saints glorified are singing, that the angels are singing. Worthy is the Lamb who was slain, who has received power and glory and wisdom and honor and might. And the whole cycle is about we win. No matter what Satan does, no matter what the world does down below, it doesn't matter. Christ has overcome. Now, when you understand it from that perspective, it gives you that long-term confidence and that long-term joy and motivation to move toward the goal. That's what the writer of Hebrews is trying to do for us here, is to try to have us focus with our eyes on the prize. Another thing here that's interesting is in verse 3. Consider him who endured, notice past tense again, he went through it, who endured such opposition from sinful men so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. When you sometimes find yourself oppressed, when you sometimes find yourself mocked or ridiculed, if you try to witness, you need to have some encouragement. I'd like you to turn to Hebrews 4. Go back a couple of chapters to chapter 4. This is on page 1866. In chapter 4, verse 14, it talks about the fact that when we focus on the victorious Christ, we have someone who understands what we're going through. In verse 14, therefore, since we have a great high priest, that means someone who stands in between us and a perfect holy God. Since we have a great high priest who has gone through the heavens, Jesus, the Son of God, let us hold firmly to the faith we profess. For we do not have a high priest who is unable to sympathize with our weaknesses, but we have one who's been tempted in every way, just as we are, yet was without sin. Let us then approach the throne of grace with confidence so that we may receive mercy and find grace to help us in our time of need. Back in chapter 12, when it tells us to fix our eyes on Jesus, when it urges us to consider him who endured opposition from sinful men, we're supposed to contemplate and think about Christ who endured the same kind of problems and hassles and trials and temptations that we face. He knows what it's like. He went through that in order to help us so that we can go through those things, so that we can come out victorious. We need to focus on Jesus because he successfully battled these things on our behalf. And to draw strength from that, to draw encouragement from that. Take a look at the last phrase, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And actually, especially I want to focus on this verse in verse 2, where it says, "For the joy before him endured the cross, scorning its shame." For some reason, I really love that phrase, scorning the shame. The world tried to put Jesus down. It tried to destroy him. It despised him. And Christ took that anger and that hatred, and he turned it into motivation. He transformed it into purpose and a resolute goal. He wasn't going to let the antagonism and the hostility of the world stop him from achieving his goal. And we are encouraged the same way. When we find someone or something that is trying to diminish our faith, trying to suppress us, trying to shut us up, we should be looking at that like Jesus looked at the cross. Scorn the shame. Let it motivate you so that you become even more resolute, even more committed. Jesus scorned the cross and he came out victorious. We are encouraged to follow suit so that we keep our eyes on Jesus. And the next time you are tempted to be weary and to quit, or someone to pressure you in that, I'd like for you to scorn the mockery, to scorn the weariness, to let that motivate you. You're not going to be a quitter. You're not going to be intimidated. You're not going to be an individual who drops out of the race. You have too much to gain, too much glory, too much joy, too much fulfillment, too much satisfaction awaits you. Nobody is going to stop us. Nobody is going to make us quit. We keep our eyes on the prize. Amen.